So, greetings from the Sun Falls, Stuyvesant Falls, where I kind of have my place. It's been a pretty hectic day because I was in the Bhakti Center for Janmashtami, and then didn't get to bed till 1:30, and then I had to get up at 5. And then, fortunately, I had someone to drive me up here so I could take a little rest. But I had canceled too many classes, and I'm too attached to the Sangha that I have here with all of you to kind of not have class. But it's been, there's just a lot of things for me to talk about. I'm not even sure I'll get to the Bhagavatam. I'd like to speak a little something about Krishna. Because yesterday was Krishna Janmashtami. I'd like to speak something about Srila Prabhupada, because today is Vyas Puja. I'd also like to speak maybe a little something, too, about Mother Kalini, because we're having a function for her today. So, and I just saw Sachi Sutta. I don't know if I think I'll start with Mother Kalini, because I don't know if everyone in my Sangha knows her, but she's actually was my neighbor up here. I mean, from my house we shared the same courtyard, and she's a revered lady saint. You know, when you're always engaged in Krishna's service, and it's very humble and simple service, it's not a lot of fireworks. It just looks like someone's cooking and someone's cleaning and someone's, serving there's his person that gave her life to Prabhupada. With pure devotion, without any motive other than to please her Guru Maharaj, her whole life. I spoke to Sachi Sutta. Some people said he was her Sachi Sutta and Kalilita. They took care of her the last 10 years because she was sick in various ways. And in Gitanagri, she said he called up her son and said it couldn't have gone better. The deities of Radha Damodar actually came into her room. It's not that people bring Radha Damodar into your room. It's Radha Damodar orders her servants to take you. So the deities came off the altar and went into her room. And holy, she took care of the cows there for so many years. And it's all known at a particular critical period of her and this devotee Muktavanya. Didn't stay, that whole place probably would have collapsed. There's not enough you can say about her. But I guess the main thing is that Prabhupada loved her. And therefore, the very end of her life, the last 3 days of her life, he brought her back to Gitanagari, where she served her whole life. And Sachi Sutta said any particular person that needed to be there came, and was just absolutely glorious. And people all over the world are remembering such a humble, simple devotee. And I think sometimes, too, I don't have such a posh life, but again, I'm a sannyasi man, you get a little glorification for your service and some facilities and things, and sometimes I worry. I say, well, for my service, maybe that's what I'll get. But these humble ladies, like Mother Kalini, that are in the background, and serving purely, I think that's what they get. They get Prabhupada and Krishna at the end. And it's so heartwarming and to see a person getting her, seeing how Prabhupada reciprocates. I mean, I think that's one of the main messages, is that, you know, it's Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. Don't underestimate the humble service to Srila Prabhupada's movement. It's marked. Prabhupada sees it. He's in touch with Krishna. And he reciprocates. Not as much for what you've done, but what your heart is. And that's what God sees. Whether it's big or simple, he sees what your heart is. And he reciprocates in that way for one's heart. So, and I'm fortunate to have known her. She would have kirtans in her house every night here, especially when Ram Roy, who started the 24-hour kirtan in New York, would come up and spend a couple of weeks here. There'd be kirtans every day in her house. She had a taste for the holy name. And she was a mother. She had her own son. She was a mother. And that means mothers love to cook and they love to feed. I remember on Prabhupada's, it's an interesting place, even though this is a kind of out of the way place. Of the last 3 years, you know, we had Satyabhaj and Radhanath Swami at our intimate Janmashtami and Vyas Puja. And, well, you know, she would cook those Prabhupada like kachori. She was such a great cook. Wow. And, I got a call from one person that I happen to know. I'm not going to mention his name, but he was a skinhead before he became a devotee. And he was arguably one of the most feared, angry people in the Lower East Side. And, you know, went through his own trials of, you know, I mean, everything, including heroin addiction. And but somehow he became a devotee. And somehow he's close to me also. He would die for me. That's the way these people are. When they like you, they'll die for you. And, you know, he called me up. He was out there doing some kind of collecting someplace. Found out she was dying. He left everything and drove there. Got there a little bit late, but held the palanquin after, you know, and she loved him. And he loved her. And, I mean, if you see him, he's like huge, muscular. And he just broke down in tears and couldn't stop crying. Remembering her love for him and remembering her love for Radha Damodar. And, you know, I was fortunate. I saw that Henry, one of our regular Sangha members, you'll probably remember this, but, you know, Tamal Krishna Marj and Vishnu John, they're the ones that had the Radha Damodar deities. They're the ones that originally worshipped them and traveled around America, making hundreds and hundreds of devotees with them. And then somehow the party disbanded and the deities wound up at Gidanagari, Prabhupada's original farm. So Tamal Krishna Marj hadn't seen those deities, I don't know, for maybe 15 years or something. So I would go there every year at Gidanagari. I'd spend a lot of time at Gidanagari, besides Vrindavan and here. That was the place I spent the most. I did Kartik Vratas and I'm really close to all the people there. And so all Krishnamurti are my friend. And I said, look, you know, let's... Well, don't worry. You know, when you're in New York the next time, you know, let us know and we'll arrange to take you. So I called up Henry, and a nice mood of service. Henry arranged a Lincoln Town car that he personally drove himself. He probably remembers this. And we got to take Tamal Krishnamurti to take darshan of Radha Damodar for the, you know, first time in 15 years and the last time he ever saw Radha Damodar. And while I was there, he was staying in Satrup Marja's cabin, and Mother Kalini was cooking for him, and then he would watch, and he turned to me one day, and he said, you know, what's the difference between what Mother Kalini's doing now and what she'll be doing after she dies? Because she was every day going to the barn, remember, in her boots, and milking the cows, and then worshiping Radha Damodar. What's that called? It's called a gopi. So she already was a gopi. You believe that Radha Damodar is Radha and Krishna, and then those are the cows. So what's the difference? Not only in the consciousness, but the activity. What a service she did, just passing away in all her glories. And what a service, you know, I'm staying here in the place I have by the mercy of Sachi Sutta and Kaili Lalita, who, when I was just a wandering monk with really no place to stay at all, they renovated a barn. They spent $70,000 at the time, maybe 20 years ago. They renovated a barn and made me a beautiful apartment. There's a new, beautiful yoga studio and hall above me. And, you know, they also, when Mother Kalini got sick, they got her and took care of her. They gave her a house, a car, health insurance, and served her. And Satsrup Maharaj, when he got sick, they bought a house for him across the street. And it's all glorious. It's all glorious. Everything was perfect. You know, her husband took sannyas when her son was 4. These were the crazy days in ISKCON, but she was so dedicated and advanced to Prabhupada that she thought allowing her husband to preach was more important than having him at home giving her shelter. And she never, you know, flinched. She never flinched. And he was so grateful. He's a good friend of mine, Keshav Bharti Maharaj, that I called him up just before he died, and he read me this letter that he wrote of intense gratitude for his wife, who probably hadn't seen in 30 years, even more maybe, I don't, can't remember, probably in 36 years or something, I don't know. But the gratitude he had as his Vartman Padarshika Guru. Vartman Padarshika Guru showed him the way. And that's one thing I'd like to say about Prabhupada, is Prabhupada is a person. A person reciprocates service and love. That's natural. And we've seen in the last year, 4 of his disciples leave, who have done substantial service. Not all of them had pure lives. But they did substantial service. At one time or another, they gave their life, heart and soul, to Prabhupada without any expectations of anything in return. From Kamarupa, who never really personally saw Prabhupada, but got initiated by him, but was 100% a Prabhupada man. 100% the Prabhupada man. Died in Vrindavan amidst his cows. As a service to Prabhupada, he took care of cows. And Brahmananda, who gave his life to Prabhupada the best he could, not easy, being sent to Africa to preach. You know, I guess once Prabhupada sent to Pakistan, and they thought Prabhupada that they had died there. And, died in Vrindavan. Saved Prabhupada from the hospital. When Prabhupada was in the hospital, Prabhupada wanted to leave, and they grabbed the bed and wheeled it down the halls, and it saved Prabhupada from the hospital. I think some of the Prabhupada said that one day I will save you, and he's about to go to the hospital. He came up to Delhi, and then boom, he keeled over in Vrindavan, just immediately left. And his brother said, yes, so Prabhupada said, I'll save you, you save me. Reciprocation and love. And Sarab Swami, he built the Vrindavan temple. He had some little talent, and Prabhupada immediately made him the architect. Prabhupada would empower people. He would see their talents, facilitate them, encourage them. And he disappeared for about 30 years. Just before he died, somehow he had the inspiration. He came to Vrindavan, and one day he died. And of course, Mother Kalini. So, it's all glories to Srila Prabhupada. He is in touch with Krishna. And if you give and dedicate your life to him, he won't forget you. And you may not die, who knows? You may die in Vrindavan, you may die any place, but rest assured that Prabhupada's with you. Yes. Okay, and yesterday was Janmashtami, and I usually celebrate it up here, but they asked me to stay in the Bhakti Center because there's a big program, Radha Govindaman, but about 50 people, but it was really, what a pleasure. It was the core devotees, and it was probably the best Janmashtami I ever attended. I spoke on Krishna's birth, and then we had kirtan. I spoke on Krishna's birth and kirtan, and it was just beautiful. By the way, if the last week some of my student friends from Columbia were there, they'll know this. Eleanor Guzman, I pronounced it right, and her mother came to our Janmashtami festival, and it looked like they had an incredible time. It looked like they were on the edge of their seats listening to the class. And I spoke about Krishna's birth, beginning with the first verse of the Krishna book, once the world was overburdened by an unnecessary defense force of demonic kings. And therefore, Mother Bhumi, personified in the cow, went to Lord Brahma. And, of course, I explained that, Krishna's birth doesn't mean that he's become existent. It meant that he became invisible. And the perfect analogy is of the sun. The sun is, like right now, where I am, it's 9:30, so the sun's a little bit up in the sky. But for another person, at the same exact time, the sun is at 10:30. Another person, the sun is at 12:30. Another person, the sun is at dawn, or dusk, or midnight. So where is the sun? Is the sun being born on the horizon now, or is that new? No, it's simultaneously in all times. It's from our perspective, it's that way. So from our perspective, God appears to be born. And then I brought it back to the scene of, you know, it begins where Kamsa is driving the chariot of his sister, Devaki. You know, and that's the traditional system that when a girl gets married, she goes to her husband's house. And that helps her change her identity from I am the daughter of my father to I am the wife of my husband. And that's a very important identity change for the development of the wife and the proper, you know, social situation for family, especially in the context of that culture. This was the right psychology. But it's a tremendous, it's happiness, but, you know, the leaving of the father and the family to a new family for a protected girl. So her brother takes her, and she's surrounded by a lot of her friends, and there's a possession, so she doesn't feel so lonely. So she's with her new husband, Vasudev, and her brother is kind of, I think he's been driving the chariot. And then there's an Akashvani, there's a voice from the sky. And when there's a voice from the sky, it says, Kamsa, you're such a fool because you are driving the chariot of your sister who will produce, her eighth child will be your death. Now, two things happen here that are very one, you know, a demon wants to be in the center and wants to see the world as his. And therefore, will use any means possible to control the world without any restriction of moral principles that limit your moving the world just according to your whims. You have to move yourself according to principles. So two things happen. One, the demon's consciousness is that he's seeking to have that sense, I am God, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. So he doesn't like to be criticized and what to speak of being called a fool and what to speak when it actually has kind of a certain reason. But worse than that is the world as it's situated, the Akashvani says, that this person will carry your death. So his prime motive is not moral principles or social restraints. It's his false ego. And therefore, he wants to kill his sister because that's not the way he wants the world, with someone that will kill him. And it's such a horrible thing. Now, it was the demigods who had, spoken this. Now, the commentators give a very, very interesting commentary on why the demigods did this. And one of the reasons was, is Kamsa was such a demon. And he was already powerful, but they were afraid how much more powerful he'll get if he serves as devotee. How much more power? They had him stop him. How powerful it is to serve a devotee. They had to stop him from serving. So they of course, they wanted to also expedite the appearance of Krishna. But how powerful it is to serve a devotee. So I spoke about that. That's an interesting point for the story. And then, of course, they go to the milk ocean. And when they go to the milk ocean, Lord Brahma goes to the milk ocean because he's such a pious person. He's the chief administrator. He's the chief administrator. And you know, he can commune with God. We actually all can commune with God because God is in our heart talking to us, but we're listening to so many other voices externally and internally that we can't perceive the voice of God. We can't perceive the voice of God. And but persons like Brahma can actually hear the voice of God, not only in their heart, but God manifests also everywhere. And he's also manifest externally. He's also manifest in particular planets, particular universes. So, because Mother Bhumi went and informed that the world has been overburdened, and yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, whenever there's discrepancy in religion, God appears. Whatever the discrepancy in religion, God appears. So Vishnu informs that I will appear soon in the Adi dynasty and Tatpriyarta. The demigods are to please me, and therefore they'll go and prepare for my appearance, the demigods. So the question is raised very interestingly, and what the question was is, why did Brahma take all the demigods with him when he was capable of communicating with God himself? And the answer was, is group petition is higher than individual petition. And that's the power also of Sankirtan. That the petition together is higher than the petition with so many people, when you do it alone. And also it demonstrates, and this is, you know, in terms of any social unit, partnership, family, that family that prays together stays together. It's powerful when someone in this social unit not only goes to the deities themselves, but goes with so many people. Goes with so many people. That's very, very powerful. And then Krishna's appearance is also a very interesting point. Vasudev comes, so when he hears that, he lets go of the reins and grabs his sister's hair and takes out his sword. And he's about to cut her head off. And he's very, very powerful. And Vasudev, he can't do it. he can't do anything about it. So he's a very expert diplomat. He's a Kshatriya, but he's known to be one of the most brilliant people. He's known to be so brilliant. So Vasudev uses all, in diplomacy, the first thing you try is sama. Sama means you try to pacify someone by reason. This is how to deal with aggression. Then dana. Dana means bribe or a gift or something. Give the people something. Then beta. Beta means to try to separate them from their aggression by fear. Maybe describing the consequences if they do that. And then danda means you fight. So he couldn't fight. And so he tried to pacify him. And then he tried to create some fear. And he said, you know, how can you kill someone? How can you be so low to kill someone who's your sister? Who's a woman, who's your sister, on the day of your marriage? How can you do that? But, you know, no matter how much he tried to build up his booty, his intelligence, his judgment, to try to have him restrain his mind, which is so demoniac about his desires, and there's so little moral restraint, which comes from the booty, the intelligence, and social, you know. So he was almost feeling hopeless. You know, he's just trying and trying. And he's about to just collapse, just give up. But then he was Ashabandha. Therefore, Ashabandha means your hope cannot be bound. It means you're an extremely determined person. And in fact, when Vasudeva was born, his name also was Anakadundabi, because when he was born, they knew that this personality would have this quality of Ashabandha. So the trumpets and the Anaka and the Dundabi, the drums, they were, you know, demigods were like, wow, this person be born. So he thought, and then it just stuck in his mind, religious principles, that to save life, you have to give every possible effort. So he thought deeply, and then he looked at Kamsa and he said, it's not my wife that will kill you, it's her child, so I'll bring the children. And because people's samskaras, their impressions for honesty was so deep. And I experienced this in India even. You know, 40 years ago, when I was in India, and I would meet these people from, you know, born in the, you know, the late 1800s, like Prabhupada, and I meet these people that just have this dharma that their word is gold. Once their word is given, so therefore, Kamsa could believe him, because this was the culture. Oh, he gave his word. He gave his word. And he's Vasudeva. And, you know, he gave his word. That was it. And Kamsa, and he did. He gave all his children, the six children. His first six children were killed. But the first six children were the sons of Kalanemi, who was Kamsa in his previous life. And somehow Kamsa was cursed that in the next life he would kill his own son. So it's actually his own sons had taken birth. And Devaki's womb represents, you know, Bhakti. But first, or the heart. So to get Krishna first, lust, anger, they're called the Garbhasaras, the demons in the womb. So the sons were the personification of lust, greed, anger, illusion, fear, and something else. And Kamsa represents the principle of fear. So what happens is it's analogous that when we follow our lust, or we follow our anger, and all these are born on the false ego, we follow our lust, we follow our anger, we follow our greed, then what happens is it puts us in the bodily concept of life, where we become terribly bayam dvitiya, bayam fear, dvitiya bin evasion, duality. From this comes duality. And we're in that conception that the end of life is that death is the end of existence. And it just puts, this is, I think, the principle of AA, that people have followed their addictions to such a degree that it put them in the most fearful, helpless condition. So to a certain extent, this is how the world works. We're grinded down by following the voices of anything else, but I am a servant of Guru and Krishna. It would ground down until we surrender. Until we're ready to surrender to Krishna's will. We're following this other will based on the false ego. I am the center, me, my anxieties, my ambitions, my desires, my this, my that, my this, my this. And it leads to fear. It leads to the, you know, if you don't have the conception of God in yourself, you're in a terribly fearful condition. And as the world turns, as the world moves, it becomes more and more obvious that you're not in control of it. And you can't control old age, and you can't control disease, and you can't control death. So the world, it creates an incredible fear. And following anger, following lust, following greed, fortifies the illusion in which that fear is created. So unless we actually surrender to Guru and Krishna, we'll never conquer fear. And if we do, we'll conquer fear completely. Of course, once you're off the false ego platform and identify with the real self is eternal. You're not afraid of death. You're not afraid of anything. You have a complete conviction of the protection of God. When you live your life by Dharma, by following the principles of truth, by following doing what you should be doing, following God's will, you experience God within His will. You'll see the presence of God. He'll always be there. You may not realize it at the moment, but when you do that, you're so convinced that when death comes, you'll also see God. Prabhupada was in Delhi, and it was the Indo-Pakistan War, and, you know, there was blackouts at night, and then they, you know, in the morning, the reporter asked Prabhupada, what would you do if a bomb came? I would see Krishna. I would see Krishna. I would see Krishna. So when you, by fear, when you give up the path of lust, greed, and anger, then Guru comes. So then Balaram gets born in the womb. And after Balaram, after Guru, then Krishna gets born. Okay, you know, because I did travel a long way this morning and things, I'm going to stop now and ask if there are any questions. If there are no questions, would someone like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Gurudev. This is Vaishnavi.
Vaishnavi, oh yeah. That, wonderful that you're on. I'm so happy about that. It was great with Eleanor and her mother. You know, it's so interesting when they came.
Yeah.
What's that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was just wanted to make the comment because I wrote to her yesterday because it was her birthday. So I reminded her that it was Jamashtami and it was a special day.
That's so great. Well, she took it seriously, and it was so nice. When she came into the temple, right, the first person she met and the mother was Ximena. Then Andreas, who's from Colombia. Then there's a lady that moved there named Sundari Gopi, who's from Peru, but seven of her family members are in the Congress and, you know, another nice lady. And then she met this guy, Yadu, who was from Cali. So they felt very welcome. And then they came up, and Bhakti Lata was doing the kirtan. And then they really listened attentively for my class. And then after that, they had to go. And then they met Diana. And I thought it was, it somehow, you know, it worked out really nice. Okay. Good. Thank you for that.
I'm glad. Okay.
Okay. Good. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who is it?
This is Henry. I thank you very much for reminding me. I remember when we drove with Tamal Krishna Maharaj to Gita Nagari. It was so wonderful.
It was an amazing, wonderful thing. And I remember how much you enjoyed just the service, you know, to be able to do that, because I know you were close with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and you would, of course, visit him in Oxford or Cambridge, and to be able to reciprocate like that. That was a wonderful time, yeah. Thank you. Good. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Oh, there was two people, one at a time. Who is it?
This is Nanda Dulal. Please accept me humble obeisances.
Oh, Nanda Dulal. Hare Krishna. Great. Hare. And who else is there? Someone else say hello?
Atmananda.
Atmananda. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Who else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you very much. Kalachanji.
Alexandre, huh? Wow. Yeah. Thank you. We're having our function today here also. After the Vyas Puja, we take a feast, and then at 3 o'clock, we'll have a memorial for Mother Kalini. That we're looking forward to doing that. But it was so great. Sachi this morning just told me, you know, it couldn't have been better.
Yeah.
So that was nice. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. It's Molly.
One more person? Okay, anyway, we'll end for today. Thank you all so much for coming on the Sangha. I enjoy so much being with you. And Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.